Welcome to Talking and Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking and Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. Have you ever thought that you'd like to write a guidebook of walks to your local area? Imagining seeing your book piled high in bookshops and bumping into people reading from your guide as they walk your local streets? Julia Killingback didn't just leave it to her imagination. She put her heart and soul and considerable experience as a designer into just such a dream. 4 Explore Walks guides to Bristol and Clifton are the result. However, the route she had to follow to reach this end was far from straight or smooth. Why did you set off on this journey?
Well, I have a family history going back in Bristol, and my grandfather on my father's side came from Ireland, from Hillsborough, and he came here as a vet around about 1900. And I love it. Every time I walk down by the docks, I think of him because he was in charge of bringing all these cattle over from Ireland. And my father, when he was a tiny child, was given a little stick and had to whack them on the behind and send them across the harbour, across the Junction Lock Bridge. And I hope nobody told him they were going to the slaughterhouse, ready for the Sunday lunch tables of Bristolians. But I love that connection. And my father grew up here, studied here at the BRI. So although my father eventually went to South Wales and we grew up there, it was the obvious place to come and study. So I came here to Art College to Bristol when I was about 19 years old. And like a lot of students, just fell in love with the place. It's just such a varied place to live. I then became involved over the years with the local improvement society, which meant really exploring the place and getting involved with council decisions and planning and every aspect of Bristol. So I really got to know the place well. And then I met Mike Pascoe, who is my co-writer for Explore Walks. And he is the local historian. So between the two of us, I knew quite a lot of the history, but I needed a lot more help than that. So over a period of about 4 years, on and off, we wrote the books between us.
Okay, so how do the books differ from any other walking guidebook?
Well, I think they are quite different because the intention was, as a designer, I just love beautiful things and I wanted to produce walks books, which were not your usual dull black and white books, but books full of light and colour with most things recorded. I think there are over 100 illustrations in each book. I felt that it was really important to make them interesting for everybody. So I've had friends ring me up and say, Julia, we really loved your books. And I say, oh, that's very nice. And then they've said, well, actually, we just had an early night and we took them to bed and we had a glass of wine and we read them from cover to cover and they were great. So I do point out that wasn't quite how I imagined.
So the idea is you're encouraging people to walk more, but in fact they're armchair readers.
Yes.
So, okay, one of the reasons why we're sort of on tape to talk about this is that you've self-published these, and that's something that I think a lot of people think about when they're writing guides or would like to write their own guide. It didn't start off that way, did it? You found a local publisher?
Yes, unfortunately, things didn't work out as I'd hoped originally. And I have been published before. I've written and illustrated 12 children's books with Methuen, and I know the publishing process, but from a very nice angle in that I was looked after and spoiled rotten by them and they did everything they could to help me. I had no idea what sort of work was involved. However, a day came when I had to decide whether we were going to just bin everything that we'd done, and I just couldn't bear that. Or the other option was that I would fund the thing myself and just get on with it. And because I knew a bit about publishing, at least I thought I did, I decided to go ahead. But actually, it's been a very salutary lesson because I can't think why anybody wants to go into publishing now that I've done this. From the business point of view, it's just been such hard work. And to be managing everything from photographing, I photographed 3,000 images that I chose from for the book, getting the permissions from the museums and art galleries, researching in the reference library locally, just having to make every decision about how the books would be. But we think that they're fun. I'm very grateful to Mike Pascoe for his help with them. And there's just everything there. There are quotes from the people that lived here. We tell about how people lived in Georgian times, how a household actually operated. A lot of people from abroad are interested in that. They love the detail of that. And they've just got a lot of colour. And I hope that they're the sort of books that people will, they'll enjoy the walks, but when they go home, that they'd love to keep them, because there's a reminder of all these beautiful buildings. We're surrounded by beautiful things.
You started by publishing four books. Was the intention originally just to do one guided tour? I mean, yes. Tell us, how did it all incubate and come together?
Well, Mike and I both live in Clifton, and so the centre of Clifton, the heart of Clifton, is the part that we knew best. So we started off with that, and having written what we wanted to for that area, we kept thinking, oh, but we've missed out a bit about Clifton College. We've missed out the very beautiful but modern Roman Catholic Cathedral in the Victorian area. So we decided, and the lovely thing was, once we had the format, it was easy to transfer that. It got easier. And we've ended up then, we thought, oh, but Clifton Wood's so fascinating. It's a very unknown area to most people, but it's got the most extraordinary history with the Goldney family, who made their money basically from piracy, legalised piracy, but people have to read the book to find out more. And then Hot Wells, which was a rival to Bath, and it was the most sparkling place where people not only came for cures, but there was dancing and wonderful gaming, and I think it was quite a saucy place really at the time. So yes, we just spread our wings a bit. And now, of course, somebody complained to me last weekend that I hadn't covered Southville. Well, I'd love to cover Southville, but what I'm hoping is that we're going to find other enthusiasts about other areas, not just here, maybe in Bath, in London, in York, in Manchester, who would love to write about their places. And I'd love to see this series going on, but it needs clever people with a huge enthusiasm and also prepared to do quite a lot of work, but hopefully enjoy it in other areas. So that's my dream, but I don't know if my dreams will come true.
Tell us more about the actual production of the book and the obstacles and difficulties you overcame. How does one begin to even start publishing your own? No, genuinely, yes. How does someone actually start to publish their own book?
Well, it was just a matter, obviously, of getting the text right. And that went through a whole process from me trying to sort out the best routes, picking the key factors in an area, and then trying to make the most interesting routes between them with interesting things.
So you chose potential destinations and then worked out routes?
That's right.
Rather than working out the route and just happen to pass this landmark?
No, because we've got wonderful things like the Clifton Suspension Bridge and the SS Great Britain. And so it was key to get our major things in. So first of all, I just walked and walked and walked and wrote notes. I wrote notes on a clipboard, and then people kept running out of their houses. On Royal York Crescent in Clifton, people ran out of their houses and they said, oh, you're from the council, are you reassessing our council tax? Or are you going to put in more double yellow lines? And quite extraordinary, if you're ever feeling lonely, you must carry a clipboard with you, and then people come and surround you and you make friends straight away. And then it went on from there to Mike and I doing the writing. So we would sit together and discuss various characters who'd lived in the area and so on. And there was quite a lot of research to do. And the other thing that's interesting is you can't write as if it's a book. You can only take a small amount of information at a time, because the whole idea is it's a walk and you want to keep on walking.
And how long are the walks? Did you sort of say, OK, we're going to make them 60 minutes or 20 minutes? What's the deal?
Well, we decided that most people who are lucky enough to have some free time might enjoy a morning or an afternoon's walk. So it's very difficult. We have actually timed them, and we got friends to walk them. We got friends to criticise them. We got children walking them. because there's a children's quiz included, which is hopefully going to inspire children to really look at the detail of things. But on the whole, we've said probably around about 2.5 hours. But of course, it depends, because en route there are lovely little cafes, there's some pubs, there's some very nice shops on some of the routes, and they're very much a mix of city walks, but also this area is incredibly green, so part of it's country walks as well.
So you chose the destinations, you devised the routes, you walked all the way around them, you wrote a commentary, you edited the commentary to fit the sort of instructions or whatever you're going to give for people to do the walking. You then had to go and investigate some kind of heritage or story about each of the destinations. Plus, you say you included some children's things and some conversations that you had with other people, etc. Then the photographs. So were you taking photographs at the time you were walking around, or did you have to go out and then photograph the routes afterwards?
I just took photographs the whole time, really. And sadly, when we first started the books, it was always raining. And of course, you have these very fine buildings and you need to photograph them with the light coming from the right direction. So there were evening pictures to take and there were morning pictures to take. Sometimes you struck lucky and you got a lovely little scene. Like, I came across a young family early in the morning beside the docks feeding the ducks with a wonderful view of the whole of the Clifton Wood Hill behind them. That was lucky. Some of the shots were quite difficult, so I had some help. And my wonderful builder, Trevor, he's got a very high van and a very special camera, because it was so difficult to get good pictures without the cars in. So that was really helpful. And then sometimes, although I got permission from the museums and art galleries for these very beautiful reproductions of famous Bristol paintings, I wanted to include those. It was quite an expense, so I decided to do my own drawing. Because I'm a designer, I've got some of my own drawing, especially for the children. Yes, so I enjoyed doing that.
Did you do a route map?
There's a route map at the beginning of each book and very clear instructions. They're circular walks, so nobody's going to get lost.
And was that something you had to get permissions for as well?
No, not at all. I mean, you're not allowed to use an ordnance survey map, but we devised the map and I had help from a wonderful designer, Simon Bishop, who lives locally. And he was brilliant at making the map look really good and clear. Not too much information, but enough to get people around. It was really interesting. And what we did do is we decided we'd have alternative routes. So for people who perhaps didn't have quite so much time to spare, that they could see easily on the map where they could take a shortcut. And two of the walks are really quite exciting. They've got wonderful views. But of course, if you have a walk with views, it means you're overlooking something usually. And so people who feel that a climb back up a hill is too much, we've got wonderful suggestions. We tell people how they can take the ferry. So part of the walk can become a ferry ride, followed by a bus ride. Well, there are alternative suggestions. But I just hope, even I've got older friends who actually have been very happy just to read them and enjoy them and imagine the place.
Put all this stuff together. How do we actually make it into a book? How did you choose the size of the book?
It's supposedly pocket size. That was the idea, that you need a pocket size book. You need a book that's got a cover that's reasonably rainproof. The designer had the idea to give the books the sort of feeling that they were a little bit like the maps that you see, the Ordnance Survey maps. It's just the way the layout is. And also because we wanted books that would transfer to other places, if that ever came about. And then there were all sorts of exciting things to do. I know Mayor George Ferguson quite well from past projects that we've done concerning Bristol and Clifton. And he very kindly endorsed the books, which is great, really. And I also had support from Bristol City Council in the form of a loan, which I'm very grateful for. It's been nice to have the city involved. And
are the books printed in Bristol or in China? Did you find you talked about a designer, so you had to find a book designer, did you? You had to go out and find a book designer.
I had to find a graphic designer, because although I'm a designer and I've spent my life designing all sorts of products for big companies all over the world, really. Actual graphic design isn't my thing, and you need those skills, and it is the most extraordinary skill, and I was most lucky to have him. As far as the printer was concerned, we were really trying desperately hard to find a printer nearby, and we are as near as we could be in that we went to Exeter. The printer is in Exeter. But when the books were delivered to my house, so I've had about 6,000 books delivered to my house.
There are four books, so you have 1,500 of each printed.
Yes, roundabout. We had 2,000 printed of the major book, which is The Heart of Clifton, the one that we thought most people might like to start off with anyway. But interestingly enough, it doesn't always pay off, because I was amazed to discover when the books were delivered to me, the man with his lorry rang me during the day, and he said, "What time do you close?" And I said, "I don't close, I'm a household, it's my home." And it was pouring with rain, and he had a lifter from his truck. This is just for two of the books. This vast pallet arrived, and he put the pallet on the pavement outside, and he said, "There you are." And I said, "Well, excuse me, can you bring them inside?" He said, "That's not part of my job." Well, my surname is Killingback, and I do sometimes suffer from a bad back, and it took persuading him by giving him some of my other children's books for his children before he brought them in. So there are all sorts of strange things that have happened which I wasn't really expecting. And so the books are here, and I have a distributor, Richard Jones from Tangent Books, who is helping me, because I can't actually manage all the business side of everything. We've been doing a lot of talks and exhibitions, and it just takes time making up posters, and it's a very busy life, and I do admire publishers having had a go at this. I admire them.
You're not that put off, because you actually want to do some more.
Well, I personally don't think that I'm qualified to do more, because this is the area that I know and love. I think there's a bit of passion in all this. I think whoever is going to do other books, and it might not ever happen, but it would be lovely if it did, it needs to be somebody that really knows their area. So most areas have local historians who are really enthusiastic, who are consulted about their areas, and it needs somebody like that. And actually, it should be easier for someone in the future, because there are so many decisions made, it would be much easier. But the format of the books is really basically what I've been working on. So apart from the writing, I've just more or less done everything else myself.
Beyond the writing, so people, they have a map, they have the commentary, but they can also use the photographs to find their way around.
Well, the photographs are there. So for instance, I don't know whether young children would know what a fan light was. A fan light is a window above the front door of a Georgian house, and it's in the shape of a fan. So, and that's rather intriguing, I think, and some of them are very beautiful. I did a drawing of a fan with the same design on it as there is in a fan light window on a Georgian house, to show children how it is, and that's why it's called a fan light. So, and for them, the main thing was, when we were small, we were so lucky. Our mother really made us look at things, the detail of things. I was hoping, in today's age, I think children get such fleeting glimpses of things from television and their lives go so fast, but there's such a pleasure in just looking at very beautiful things, and we're surrounded by absolutely lovely things here. But more exciting for them as well, there are all sorts of things. We've got two giants in the area, and we have a secret tunnel that goes under some buildings that most people don't know about. And although the idea was to have the questions for the children, we're pretty sure that most of the adults will have a go as well.
I think they're fabulous. They look great. Obviously, I haven't tested them.
Oh, you must test them.
So at some point, I'm going to have to test them. So would you like to recommend a couple of walks? Maybe recommend one that's tied to the books here and another one elsewhere?
It's actually terribly difficult, because in a way it depends. If you're, say you come from abroad and you've never been to this area before, I imagine that those people would love to really get to know more of the detail of Clifton. So that was the first book that we wrote. Because I didn't know so much about it, but have discovered that it is the most charming walk, I love the Clifton Wood Walk. But then that leaves out Hot Wells. That's full of interest and waterside walking by the docks and so on. And then the Victorian Clifton Walk includes the most wonderful original Victorian arcade, which is absolutely fascinating to anybody to see how Victorian shops were. It was an arcade built for people's enjoyment. They used to have an orchestra there. There was a cow tethered there so that you could buy a glass of frothy fresh milk. There were palm trees. And the strange thing is, and nobody knows why, it actually wasn't very successful at the time. It didn't last long. But now it's been revived and it's a lovely place for people to go. So we've tried to include a whole variety of unusual venues for people to visit. And that's just one of them.
How do I go out and get an Explore Walks guide?
Well, if you live in Bristol, Stanford's Bookshop, who are also in London, and they're only the two branches in Britain, they are the walking and maps and guide books experts. So that would be one place to start. But they are actually now at all the major tourist venues in the museum, at the Clifton Suspension Bridge. They're in small venues as well. And you can see a list of these venues on our website, which is www.explorewalks.co.uk, and you can read more about them and find out a bit more there. And on that site you'll be able to see which title might be of most interest to you.
Because this is taking you a huge long time. You said it took you about 4 years to write these and another 4 years to get them into the shops.
Yes, that's why I need a break.
So what I was going to say is, of the whole process, what's the one thing that you would like to do more of? And what's the one aspect you'd like to do less of? So what's the one bit of it all that you think you'd like to continue?
Well, this is a very difficult one. I would just love, as I said, to see the books go into the future. That would be lovely. I think for the moment, I'm just catching my breath. I'm very happy to promote them and I'm hoping that people will really enjoy them. As to the future, and certainly as to writing more, I think I'm going to leave that to other people now, because it's been a long process and I've really loved it. And the nice thing is that I'm having really nice feedback about them and that people seem to be enjoying them. That's what I wanted. I didn't like the idea of people just wandering around. I've sometimes in the past seen people coming up my street, which is very close to the Clifton Suspension Bridge, and they've just got a little local map and they're walking up there and they have no idea what amazing things they're passing or what the history was of this particular house, who lived here, whose monument is that, what did they do? And there are some wonderful stories linked with Bristol's trade, the wine business, the tobacco business, and there are some extraordinary stories to be told. And we hope that we've included an awful lot of those within the walks.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities in London. In this episode, you've heard from Julia Killingback. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of EC Tronic.